The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence, and now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Welcome, listeners. This is Divya Parekh, and it's Monday evening. And I want to share with you that this is a pre-recorded session, and I'm sure you all remember Simone Mincenzi. Simone had stayed up till 2 a.m. at night to join our show. And, you know, he is such a ball of energy. And through him, I had this wonderful opportunity to meet Lavelda Mincenzi. And she is amazing, as Simone is. So I want to share with you that today we have Lavelda Mincenzi on our show. So welcome, Lavelda.
Hey, Javier. It's so great to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. So I want to share, folks, Lavelda is a global moderator and MC, injecting energy into events around the globe. Reliable, energetic, engaging, and flexible in all situations. She effortlessly handles the front of the house, regardless of what's happening backstage. She is an event organizer's secret weapon. And also she does masterminding, she does one-on-one coaching, and she speaks on stages, and she helps other people shine as well. So welcome again, Lavelda.
Hey, it's great to be here.
You know, Lavelda, we always start out with a question that brings back some great childhood memories or any remarkable event, because, you know, we are who we are today, starting from somewhere. So do you recall any memorable moments?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. My memorable moment. I'm going to stick to the topic of speaking. It took me a while, actually, but I remember my very first speaking engagement, and I'm going to call it that. I was probably about 13, and I remember it because I found a photo of me doing it, and it was for the school assembly. There were probably about 300 people that day. I don't recall being nervous. I just... if there were any nerves, it was more about what I was going to say rather than the actual, you know, event of being in front of like 300 people. That didn't really faze me. It was kind of like, you know, what am I going to say? And is it going to be okay? So that's probably one of my biggest memories at the moment. Well, it's the first one that came to my mind.
How old were you at that time?
I was about 13.
Oh, and you know, that's the time when girls tend to kind of shy away. You know, they become so much more social and tend to walk in groups, and it's hard for them to come out of their shell. So can you share, like, you know, when you were 13 and when you were going on the stage and when it was all done, what was going through your mind?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. I was one of these people that kind of sought out a stage. So normally I'd just be a bit buzzed after I'd finished, you know, whether it was a drama, you know, dancing or singing or a debate, I'd normally just leave feeling pretty kind of buzzed. It was kind of like that kind of nice, happy, like, yes, feeling. But specifically, I can't say I recall.
And that's totally okay. So as you move through your life, right, we all go through it. So when we are young, it's hard to know what we want. So did you have any inkling whatsoever as to what did you want to become?
Oh gosh, I had loads of inklings. None of them turned out to be right. I kind of jumped from one thing to another. So let's see. First, I wanted to be a ballerina because that sounded like it'd be good fun. Oh. Uh-huh. I thought it'd be grand. And I loved the idea of kind of floating around doing ballet. So first I wanted to do that, but then that didn't quite work out. So then at one point I know I wanted to be a hotel manager. Nope. Then I wanted to be a backup dancer. I don't know. I didn't really want to be the front of the stage, but I did like the idea of doing like the backup dancing. And it was that or being in sort of musicals, because I loved them. So it was like, you know, could be in the chorus at the musical. So that was really great. And then I kind of dropped entirely out of drama and I thought it would be a great idea to be a hotel manager. So I wanted to do that for a while. Give me a spot of hospitality. And then I thought I'd be an accountant. That didn't last very long. And then I went through a really long phase of genuinely not having a clue. It was pretty much as soon as I finished uni, no idea.
Oh, wow. And you know, that's the beauty of life, right? You're engaging and finding out and exploring different things. So many times what happens is that people just box themselves in one career where they're in and they do not explore different facets of life. So as you move through different careers, what kept you going towards the destination that you didn't even know of yet?
What kept me going? I think I've always thought life just needs to have some sort of flavor to it. I'm really big on creating memories and doing things that are sort of interesting. And once I kind of stumbled off this idea of like perhaps having my own business, my ongoing saying was, I am not gonna leave a corporate job to create a business that's more boring than my corporate job. That just doesn't sound like a good idea. I may as well stay here and not have all the rest of the drama associated with it. I can go in, do my job, get paid, go home. Somebody else worries about the finances of the business and everything else associated with it. I've just got my little piece of the puzzle. So I thought, I'm not taking on the whole puzzle for it to just be a nightmare. So I thought, for as long as it takes me to work out what I want that to be, I'm doing both. And when I stumble across something where I think, oh, this is it, this seems like it could not only be really interesting and fun and exciting for me and get me really kind of juiced, but it would support the lifestyle that I want to live, where I can travel and, you know, hang out with friends and do things a little bit more on a whim rather than, you know, having to ask for annual leave. Oh, that used to bug me. Didn't like that.
And I love what you're saying, that, you know, I'm not going to leave my corporate job for something that does not interest me. And you wanted to bring that spice into your life. So how did you know that you wanted to be in this area of MC and event planning and being a speaker and working with people?
I just followed the breadcrumbs. I think some people, it always irritated me when people, I always knew exactly what I wanted to be. I kind of wanted to hit them because I was never that person. I was never that person who knew exactly what I wanted to be. And anytime I thought I did, somebody told me it was the wrong thing to want to do because it was too creative. It wasn't, well, not too creative. It wasn't going to make enough money. You come back to that later. It wasn't academic enough. Like somebody told me it was the wrong thing to really want to do. So I never really had that solid idea, which is this is it. So in the end, I just thought I'm going to follow the breadcrumbs and just see where that leads to. And so in doing so, I probably had more failures than anything else. Like, I mean, I started some things that lasted like half a second. It felt like it sizzled out before it even really began. And then I started other things where I felt like I was getting momentum, and then something about it just, it's difficult to say, just that little energy or something about it just didn't really feel right. And each time I'd start one of these ventures, I felt like I was getting that bit closer to something that would really excite me, but there'd be something off. So I'll give you an example. At one point I thought, I'm going to run events. That'll be really fun. And I realized that the event planning was really interesting for me. And I like coming up with, like, I'm a really detailed person. And there's a reason I wanted to go into hospitality, because I like creating an energy, or I like hosting. That's what it is. I like hosting. I like having little surprises. I like thinking, what could I do that'd be a little bit luxurious or a bit different that people aren't anticipating? Didn't enjoy filling a room. just realized it just was not my idea of fun. I mean, it used to stress me out. I'd have this beautiful event and all of the marketing and the sales and all, I mean, I just didn't want to do it. And so I just thought, well, let's just suck the life out of it. So then I thought, I know what, I'll do some coaching. That'll be easier. And then after a while, I was looking at the model I'd set up and it meant I had to have so many clients. And I just thought, I don't want to be somewhere all the time. I mean, it's really pathetic. I just don't want to. And so in some respects, I kind of followed the breadcrumbs and was a bit of a spoiled child about it. I'd hit something I didn't want to do. And I think surely I can have all the bits I really like and throw out the stuff I don't enjoy doing. And that's not to say that I don't have to do, I mean, I've worked in sales for 8 years. I can sell stuff. I just didn't like selling into a room. So, you know, it was a whole fallacy telling myself I couldn't sell. I worked in corporate sales for 8-9 years. Like, I know how to sell. So it had nothing to do with that. It was just a different sales structure and a different marketing structure. And I just couldn't get excited about doing the marketing and the sales in that space. So I let it go. And I think it's just one thing led to another. But each time I emerged from yet another failure, because that's what it literally felt like. I was like, so other people started at about the same time as me. They seem to be doing stuff and I'm still stuck. Great. Very familiar with that feeling of being really stuck. But each time I reemerged, what would happen was, A, it was that much easier. And it was that much easier because even though a part of me wanted to say, oh, Lavelda, you've thrown the baby out with the bathwater and you've started from scratch, you don't forget, do you? You know, I don't forget how to set up an email marketing campaign. I don't forget how to do a sales landing page. You know, I don't forget all of those processes that the first time it took me forever to find out what the heck MailChimp was and set it up and then write the emails and do the branding and create a lot. I mean, all of this stuff just felt like everything was just like 1600 years to do, right? And by the time you get to like venture five, you're kind of like click, 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 bosh, bang, we're ready to go. So yes, there were lots of new things and maybe I was finding a new audience. But I knew what that process would be like. You know, I'd worked out how to hack my way around a website and I had a videographer and I knew a really great video editor. And, you know, I had a different network, a richer network to support me than I did when I started the first time. So I had people I could ask. I wasn't writing the very first contract from scratch. So I think it was that bit of like literally just following the breadcrumbs, but then constantly reminding myself that I genuinely wasn't starting from scratch, because each time I did it, I got that much closer to what it was I really wanted to do, because it just was never clear. And I think that's what people struggle with this, with business. We want so much clarity, you ain't gonna get it. It just doesn't, you know, 9 times out of 10 it's just not that clear. You can have a sense, it's like, oh, you know, something's calling me in a particular direction, but you know, exactly what colors and what steps do I take next? And is it happening this year or is it in 5 years or is it next month? Like, you just don't know.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, the 3 or 4 things that have emerged for me is you mentioned about failures. And what I'm seeing over here is it's not a failure. I see somebody who's an adventurer who experiences life and is bringing the same thing to the audience and to her members. And when you talk about those failures, it's like, right, we don't know what's life going to bring tomorrow. So similarly for business, especially for people who don't know what they want to do, it's like, you know, you see around and you see that, oh, I know exactly where I'm going and this is what I want to do. So rather than feeling less than anyone, because I do believe that comparison is the thief of joy, you let the joy in your life and you continue towards it. It was your why, that big why, that kept you going through the whole journey. So beautiful, Lavelda.
Thank you. It's a bit of a hodgepodge story. I think I do love hearing the stories of clarity. I'm just not one of them.
You know, the way I see it is that you had clarity about going and keep on going on your journey. You knew that something was calling you. And that's a huge clarity in itself. Because if you are not clear about your why, that, you know, there is this sense of adventure, there is something that's calling me, I want to pursue it, I want to persevere, I'm not going to give up. So I see it that way. And it's beautiful, very inspiring story. So now, as you were going through all this, and now, when was the final moment that you knew that, yes, MC and hosting was the final thing for you?
I don't know that there was a precise moment. I tend to stumble into things. So one thing I had going for me, if somebody suggested I should do something, I was the sort of person that would say, yeah, sure, no problem, and then worry about it later. And normally it would be about 2 days before I'd said, before the activity I'd said yes to was in front of me, I'd go, oh heck, what did I just agree to? But it was, by that point, it's normally far too late. So I wouldn't overthink it. If I thought I could probably do that, I'd say yeah, and then I'd work it out later. And so I kind of did a lot of that. And I was always fine on stage, and I used to ask to MC when I couldn't get a speaking gig. That's how fine, let me introduce the speakers. And secondly, people used to ask me to do it occasionally. But the first gig, I remember the first gig I MC'd where I genuinely went, ooh, this is interesting. Because I'd done it a little bit for like smaller events. But this one, they had some really good, well-known speakers. They had the guy who started a beer brand called Cobra Beer in the UK. They had Rachel Elnor, who was one of the first dragons on Dragon's Den. I think she was in series one or something. So they had some really big, well-known names of people who'd done some really great business. And so I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And it was one of these student-run events. They literally asked me to do it at the last minute. And I thought, oh, what the heck, I'll give it a go. I didn't really think too much about it. I spotted it on some Facebook page somewhere and put my name forward. They weren't paying anything for it. I thought, oh, sod it, I'll give it a go. And at the time, I didn't really know much about building a speaking business, but I did kind of, I said to a friend, look, you come along, you take a couple of photos for me. Didn't brief her very well because she got so caught up in the event she forgot she was supposed to be taking these pictures. So I think she got one or two, but they weren't really kind of usable. It was nice, like for social media, but I genuinely wasn't thinking that much about it. And I remember when I arrived and they had a green room for the speakers, I was like, oh, this is nice. And I sat at the front of the room and the organizers were in an absolute panic because, you know, they're students, it's the first time them doing something of this scale, the level of speakers they brought in was incredible, you know, and things weren't quite running to time. And for me, I was like, oh, you know, I'm at the front texting them, no, no problem, it's fine, I can hold it off for another 5 minutes. You need them to go for a bit longer, no problem. So the next one's going to start, you know, it was just no problem at all for me. I loved it. I left and I thought, oh, this is interesting. But it was the first time I'd stumbled across any event like that. So I just didn't think about it too much. And then a few years later, a year or so later, somebody contacted me on LinkedIn. And so I did the first one for them for free. And then after that, I thought, oh, I've got a bit of balls here now. I'm gonna ask for some cash, right? I feel like maybe I could do this. And they had, you know, they had CEOs, CMOs, like senior executives from businesses that I was introducing onto the stage. And theirs were mainly sort of panel sessions. And so I was doing a lot of interviewing and I thought, well, I could get used to this. And so they booked me a handful of times and then they went and did some events in the US. And then I think they decided they didn't have any budget anymore or whatever. And so I kind of was like, this is interesting. These things are slowly starting to come through. And I hadn't genuinely at this point, I think my LinkedIn profile said I was a speaker. I hadn't mentioned moderating really. I said I'd done, I had a radio show, so I was happy to interview people. And then later on that same year, I got contacted by this event organizer doing an event in Paris for like 3,000 people. I was like, mamma mia, like what is going on here? So at that point, of course I said yes to them. I charged them too. And they had some great video footage. By this point, I was starting to get a little bit savvier about how this works. And so I thought, well, hold on a minute. I haven't even told people this is what I do yet, but they keep stumbling across me. And every time they book me, I get really, really great feedback. So I thought, right, I'm going to give it a whirl. I will put some really focused attention on it for about at least 3 or 4 months and see if, you know, if I build some momentum around it and it seems to get some traction, I'll stick with it. But if not, then at least I can say I gave it some focused attention. So, you know, I really started investing and understanding, you know, how the heck do you find these? Because up until now, I've stumbled across it or somebody had given it me. It's just like, I don't know where they come from. Somebody, they're just kind of coming through recommendations and they started paying now. So I'll just call myself a professional MC, and I went to Paris and now I'm international, and we'll see where we'll go from there. And it has, it's really taken off. I mean, I was just having a look at my diary for this month, and it's a little bit ridiculous. I've got Denmark followed by Paris, because I'm back in Paris again, and then I'm off to Malta, and it's just, you know, where you could just kind of, I was like, oh, crikey, this is kind of nice. So I don't know that there was a moment, but I think the first time I thought, ooh, this is really interesting, was the first event I was ever booked on where they had a really professional setup. And then I thought, ooh, I could get used to this. But I didn't know it was a thing, you know, it kind of felt like maybe I'd stumbled on something. You know, when you find like a really nice cake in a tiny little bakery, but it was an accident. You know, the chef threw the wrong ingredient in and they stumbled across something. So I didn't know it was really a thing. And when I did, I met a handful, which is interesting, is I met a handful of other people who were doing MCing and moderating. And they pretty much all told me, Lavalda, you can't really make any money from this. And I thought, well, okay then, that don't sound good. So it's interesting because, you know, in terms of the speaking industry, I would say that of all of the areas in speaking to focus your attention, hosting, emceeing, moderating, chairing, whatever you want to call it, is probably the hardest one to break into. And the number of professional MCs and moderators who've told me you don't really make much money from this. So I'm probably one of the more expensive ones.
Well, you're a pioneer in that industry. And, you know, you have also talked about the speaking industry, that, you know, you wanted to get into speaking and then you found MC. So there are a lot of speakers out there. So we'll kind of look at different scenarios. So for example, let's say if there were young speakers, or if there were any speakers for that matter, you know, there are a lot of different coaches and a lot of women and men leaving corporate jobs and getting into coaching and consulting business. And speaking is something where you can market, not just one-on-one, but one-to-many. And also it establishes you as an expert. So for beginners, what would your advice be?
Video everything. Biggest piece of advice I can give you. Because as soon as, so you have two, well, there's really three models in the speaking industry. There's what I call the pay to speak. And this is where, as the name suggests, you pay to get on the stage. And it's really not for everybody. You have to know your numbers as a salesperson. Like, you have to be really good at selling from the stage to make that a viable option. And most people, beginners, I would say, stay clear of it unless you've got some training. The other is the free speaking engagement, which most people, after they've done a bit of speaking, like to poo-poo over and say, oh, I'm good at this now. I should be paid for my talents. And I said, well, that's all well and good, but I'll come on and tell you what the paid model looks like. And it's a very different space. But if you have a product or service, you're a coach or a consultant, it's a very brilliant marketing tool to use the stage for. And when you stop thinking of the free engagement as they just don't value my time, and translate that to, oh my gosh, it's costing me nothing to build a really deep relationship with a group of people and convert that into money. Honestly, you get very, very, it's a great feel to start raising awareness, increasing your expertise, but also getting clients when you set it up and configure it correctly. And it doesn't need to be a hard sales pitch, but if you're in front of an audience of the right sort of people, look, what would you rather be? In the room, walking around hoping you can catch the right people, or on the stage attracting them to you? I know which one I'd rather have. So if you start to think of being on a stage as a marketing opportunity, then you don't necessarily have to be paid for the engagement. You can still generate revenue from that speaking engagement through other mechanisms. Because when you do get all highfaluted and then think, hold on, I've got talent, I should be paid for my talent, I'll tell you how it actually works when somebody's investing money for you to speak. It's like you're an artist then. You're an entertainer, right? Let's put it this way. You are now in the entertainment industry when you're being paid to speak. People do not hire an entertainer and pay them good money that they have not seen for themselves. Full stop, period, end of story. And you know it because if you got married or if you ever had to book somebody for a party, did you book it because they came up and told you they were brilliant? Or did you hunt around YouTube, have a look at some videos, or somebody recommended them? It's the only time you get booked without video footage, somebody else's recommendation. But I'll tell you what, even where I've had recommendations, they've still gone and looked at my video footage every single time. Because what happens, the person gives a recommendation. I saw this girl, she's really brilliant. You should have a look at her. That's what they'll say. You should check her out for yourself. Because the person who's recommending isn't paying you.
Very true. The money's not coming out of their pockets.
The money's not coming out of their pocket. It's cheap for them to say, go and look at this one. But it does get your foot in the door a lot quicker. And that person will be less, more forgiving if your footage isn't brilliant. But if you want to be a professional speaker and be paid for it, you got to look like a professional speaker to be paid for. If you saw a band and they were saying, I'm not even going to call it a band. I'm going to compare it to hotel rooms because this is the best way I know to do it, right? Because everybody's booked a hotel room. People have booked hotel rooms or they've looked at hotel rooms. And if you were looking at a budget hotel, you know, some sort of motel, Holiday Inn or something like that, you know, lower end of the price. You'll look at it. If they had prices that were say like $500, £300 per night, right? You'd take one look at that and go, ain't gonna happen. It's never gonna happen. They don't have a pool. There's no concierge. What do you mean I've got to bring my own towels? Like, it's just not gonna happen. Rock up and there's no, they've attached the soap to the wall. They've not got the nice smellies. It's all, there's no view. I'm looking at a car park. No chance I'm paying that amount of money. Not gonna happen. And the same happens the other way around, right? If you look at a hotel, Ritz-Carlton, or one of these like really luxurious hotel names, you'll take one look at that website, and then when you see the price, you go, yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. Doesn't mean you want to pay it, but you go, of course it is, right? I'm not going to argue with the number. They have a spa. Look at those rooms, prime location, swimming pool, concierge. I mean, look at all of this marvelous stuff they've got. You take a look at it. You know, they don't put crappy photos somebody's taken on an iPhone, do they? They've gone and hired the best of the best professional photographer. In the same way, you can't use shoddy video footage of you, shoddy photos, and expect to be paid top buck as a speaker. It just doesn't happen. So it's all well and good being new to the gig saying, oh, that's it. I feel like I'm good at this now and I deserve to get paid. Best bit of advice I can give you, if you want to go down the paid speaking engagement from the beginning, get your video footage sorted. Because the number of people I meet who've been speaking for like years, and I want to get paid now. And I said, well, show me what you've got. And they go, I haven't got any footage. I'm like, well, I can't help you. Not that I can't help you, but you need to get your next gig videoed. I can send you a professional camera crew. I can tell you who to talk to, but you need to get it videoed. And as long as you've got that footage, we can slice it, dice it, turn it into a show. We'll take little snippets. But what are you going to send people to look at when they say, oh, that's lovely. What do you talk on? Then they're going to want a sense of who you are. And it's not just about your topic. You can describe that very well. But having done events for myself and book speakers, it's a curated experience. Right? So we're not just, an event organizer isn't just looking at what you talk about. They're also looking at how you talk about it. Are you a high energy speaker? Are you like, I mean, would you put a Deepak Chopra on the same stage as a Tony Robbins? You kind of have to put them at opposite ends of the stage, right? You kind of have to start with one or end with, but you wouldn't put them back to back. It's called stupid. The energy just goes right up and then smashes. I mean, no audience wants to go on that journey. It's just too much, right? And so it's not that either of them is bad. They're both brilliant. But they come at it at a very different sort of energy and pace, and their delivery style is very different. So it depends on what the organizer is wanting to create. And they're going to want a bit of a variety, but not too extreme. So they're going to need to compare you how you deliver to say, are you the right, you know, you might be brilliant. They might just say you're just not the right fit for this event. That happens too. So yeah, you best bit of advice. It's a long way of saying get your video footage.
No, it makes perfect sense because as you mentioned, you know, especially in today's day and age, you could go to a great studio and get fantastic headshots and fantastic pictures, but it does not give the organizers a sense of who you are. You really struck a point there. It's that definitely struck a chord with me because it so depends. Like, let's say, you know, if there was a conference about meditation or about, you know, feeling, bringing that calm in, then of course Deepak Chopra would be fully on. And now if you have a conference about how do you motivate your employees and get that energy going, and now you're bringing in Tony Robbins, and of course, you know, he's all about rah, rah, rah and getting the room on fire. So definitely it's so important to give a sense of who you are. So now we have talked about that, about having the footage and the right footage for that matter. What would be a couple of other steps for the speakers?
I used to call myself queen of the bleeding obvious because we overcomplicate things so much. The number of times people say, oh, Lavelle, you've got a list of organizers. I'm like, yeah, of course I do. I don't know that they're going to be any good for you, but of course I do, love. I've got loads of them, but it depends on what you're looking for. Like, so when it comes to finding, I guess building a speaking business is not any different to building any other type of business in principle, right? It's exactly the same. You have a product, and in the speaking industry, that's your talk or talks. Normally you'd have a signature talk and maybe a couple of variations on that. Not a menu of all and sundry because nobody's interested. I'm telling you, just confuse people. It's like what I call the pizza, kebab, fish and chips, curry house. Like, nobody eats there. You go to a good pizza place, or you go to a good fish and chip place, or you go to a good curry house. But if they do all of it, you go, what are they leading with? And you just buy that, right? So you know, oh, this is a fish and chip shop that got confused and added curry and pizzas. I'm not having their pizza because what I can see right in the front, it's mainly fish and chips. So just get rid of the rest of it because it confuses your audience in the same way, right? It's not any different. I have a lot of analogies, no different. And so what I mean by that is you have a product. You have to market that product, right? You can't just be like, I'm going to sit here and wait for people to find me. There's a degree to which if you opened a shop, right, if it was a physical building, you would put out leaflets, you'd do some advertising. I mean, you'd try and get some footfall, right? And you pull people in, you'd ask them a few questions. And as with any business, when you're starting out, it's a lot of hard graft to start off with. It's like a flywheel, you know, it's big wheels. Initially, that first turn is so hard. It's so much effort to do those first ones. But after a while, you build momentum. And so you can look at people who it's like, oh, Valda, she's flying here, she's flying there. I wasn't doing it for the first few years at all. Nobody was flying me anywhere. I was struggling to get anything in the UK, forget anywhere else. It just wasn't happening. So you can look years on and go, oh my gosh, they're getting all this work. But it's about putting yourself out there. And if you're not contacting event organizers, you're not going to get booked. So this month, I've got a real focus on it. I've set myself an interesting target. I am contacting 1,000 event organizers this month. That is my target. I've got a list of about 450 at the moment. In the next week or so, I should hit 1,000. The contact will probably be made towards the end of the month. I'm very systemized with the way that I build this. And it's exactly what I teach people. I'm like, look, after a while, you'll have done so many events that you'll on so many stages that people will start to recommend. And it's happening to me to a certain extent. Some of my engagements, or a lot of my engagements now that are currently in the mix, are people who either saw me on stage, they booked me before, they were a guest, or they booked me before. And so or they've been recommended by somebody who was a guest or booked me before. And that's what a lot of speakers rely on. The challenge with relying on that, there's nothing wrong with it. It's great. It's just slow. It's just really slow.
It is slow, and I like what you said, that, you know, a lot of people are seeing at the end product where you are at right now. So the key is not just like looking at a person who you would like to be. So for example, like, you know, there may be a young woman entrepreneur and she says, I want to be like LaBelta. I want to be flying all over and I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to have a name brand. But the key thing to look over here is that stands out is just don't look at the finished product. Look at the process. Look at the journey. What has gone into building this stage and building where you are and building the life you have right now?
It's been getting okay with my pricing. It's been working really hard on my craft, but fundamentally turning myself into a sales and marketing person. Like literally just having to be like, I can sit here and be the best speaker in the world, but if I'm not getting on those stages, it isn't happening. So I've had to look at the business processes. You know, I've had to get a CRM system, which I'm used to using because I'm a salesperson, right? But I've had to set those things up for myself. I've had to build my own lists from scratch to start reaching out to event organizers. I've had to put my contracts in place and make that systemized. Get, you know, I've really had to invest in the business systems, the sales, the marketing strategy, more than I've invested in learning how to speak. I think initially it's learning how to speak and it's getting comfortable on stage. And I still do. I mean, this year I've taken two courses around voice training, and then I did voiceover coaching as well. So I will still every year invest in myself in improving my abilities on the stage. I still watch my video footage back, look at areas in which I could improve. I'll get feedback if a family member or a client or somebody I know's come along, I'll ask them to give me some feedback as well. So I'm still doing all of that stuff. But I've understood that business is run by the marketers and the salespeople. It's not run by the operations people. It's not won by them, because you can have the best operation in the world, but if you can't shift your product, get it. And it is that balance. And I've always found it very interesting to watch those people, because I find that people are either more operational or more sales and marketing, right? And you always want to be the opposite to the one you are, right? You kind of think, I'm really sales and marketing, I'd like to be more operational. If I'm really operational, I'd like to be more sales and marketing. But in a business, those teams don't get on. And here's the reason why they don't get on. Because sales and marketing go, we'll work it out later, sell the thing. Sell it, big vision, go out there. We'll work it out later. It is not a problem right now. Like, you're stressing about something that we haven't sold and you want to make something perfect, but we don't know if anybody wants it. So we'll worry about it later. And operations go, when it's right and I know it's great, then I'll start to tell people about it. The problem with sales is they don't understand what needs to happen operationally. So often they pull, I mean, it's brilliant, but it's chaotic because they pull the business ahead. Because if it weren't for the fact that they sold something you didn't quite have, you wouldn't innovate. Because once it's working perfectly, we're happy in operations. It's ticking along, tickety-boo, don't break it. You've gone and sold something we don't have, now we've got to figure it out. And if they weren't pulling, you wouldn't change it. At the same time, the problem with the ones over here is they often don't think about potential risks because they're like, we'll worry about it later. And so you do need that balance. And what you need to understand for yourself is which one of those camps you tend to sit in. And you'll know if you get a vision really quickly and you run, you bolt out the gate, you're probably a visionary and sales and marketing. You love telling people what you've got, and you're pretty much like, you'll say, yeah, we could do that. It's pretty much what those people, yeah, of course, no problem. If you find that you're resistant to do anything until it's perfect, you're probably more operational. And you've got to, when you're in your own business, you've got to work out which of those camps you sit in the most. And then you've got to stretch yourself into the other area. You know, you've got to stretch yourself into the other area. So the operations person's got to let go of that, get a VA or whomever to support in that space to stretch themselves into sales and marketing. And the visionary's got to pull themselves back a bit and allow somebody else to tell them no. because that's what they hate hearing. Don't tell me I can't do it. Work it out. Work it out. I'm married to one of them. Work it out, babe. You know, just a moment. Let's just take a moment. But without them, you don't get that growth. Because either you're steady Eddie and then you're kind of going, why is their business growing so quickly? Or your business goes, oh shit. And you've got to kind of pull it back a little bit. Oops, a bit too fast. Right? You know, you have these mini disasters is what happens when you're in the visionary space. And they get bigger and bigger until you backfill and you fill in with a team of people you can trust who can deal with the fact that you're pretty much just going to be like, work it out, because that's what they do. Work it out, work it out, work it out. But you've got to have a team of people that you trust where when they say we're going to have a problem, you have to wait and listen, because the chances are you probably will. Because, you know, the question you've got to ask is, what am I not seeing? In the other side, if you're naturally really operational, you want to pair yourself next to people who are really visionary and then strap yourself in, take a big gulp and be prepared to do a lot of really uncomfortable stuff, because it is going to be a case of, but it's not 100% ready. And you've just got to trust that because you're operational, you'll work it out. You will work it out. It will come together. It's never going to blow up, right? You will work it out. But if you don't allow you to strap yourself in and go, let's take a chance. Maybe this time, rather than going at 10, we're going to go for 50 people. Don't know how we're finding them, but we're just going to do it. And then just make the commitment and kind of work it out.
You know, that's perfect, because, you know, think about it, that, you know, if you're, whether you're interested or invested, I always kind of compare it to dating and getting married. So if you're just kind of dating, then, you know, your skin in the game is not going to be that much, and the results are not going to be as much either. And it's the different phases that, you know, as you get serious about a relationship, you are putting more time and more efforts in. So similarly for the business as well, from what you're telling. And I've had the same experience as well, as I've coached my clients, as well as I've grown my business, is that if you're not invested, if you're not putting that time and effort into it, things are not going to blow up, or things are not going to progress or move fast as you want. And another thing that you said was that resonated with me was, play at what you do and what you've got to work at, pass that on to your team or pass it on to somebody else, because why not leverage the strengths? So that was a really, really great tip. I really liked it.
I think the truth is, you cannot grow your business without it. And the number of people I see who get stuck at a certain level, and the reason is there is literally not sufficient capacity. There is insufficient capacity. Or they grow business they hate, which is the thing I was like, I'm never doing that. I just do not. It's not that you, because it's like, now I'm doing accounts and I'm doing, and you just, I just don't want to. You know, so be a petulant child sometimes and I just don't want to do it. Why am I paying somebody else? Because I don't want to do it. And the first few years, God, I think about it now and I just think, what were you thinking? Because I thought it was saving money, right? The first few years I thought, right, I'm doing my accounts. And I remember it used to take me a month, right, to do my tax return, a month. Mainly for two reasons. One, I didn't want to do it, so I put it off until they'd be due the end of January. And because I didn't want to do it, of course, my mom would say to the father, why don't you just do a little bit each month? Oh, shut up. You know, when you're just like, shut up, it's a bit late to tell me that. Of course, I know this stuff. I'm just not doing, because everything about me just doesn't want to do it. Perfectly capable. My degree is in accounting. I'm perfectly, perfectly capable of calculating all this stuff myself. I just don't want to do it. And so I put it off and put it off and put it off. It's not even that I had much to transact at the time, because there was hardly anything going on. And then in the last 3 weeks, I would do everything. Like, it would just go nuts, chuck everything in. And I'd do 3 weeks of off the grid, depressed, literally just churning through all of these receipts. And so two things happens, right? one that you notice, which is it takes you a lot of time. It's like, oh, crikey, it takes a lot of time for me to do this stuff. I lose 3 weeks of 3 weeks of the year every single year. So rather than doing anything sensible in January, I've got 11 months of a year. I pretty much write off January doing the taxes, taking longer to do it because I'm not an accountant, right? So that's the obvious thing. The less obvious thing and the more kind of energetic thing is because I don't like it so much, right? There's a bit of me that's like, I am unconsciously not wanting to create more of these flaming receipts because I hate them, right? So you end up with something happening on two levels. And often we can only see and interact with the surface level stuff, which is, all right, Lavalda, I get it. Of course, I get it. I've heard it all before. You know, all that time, effort and energy and other people can do it quicker. That's the surface level stuff. And it's absolutely true. But the bigger problem is because I don't like doing it, why the heck am I energetically going to want to create more of that? So now I'm unconsciously averse to creating on more money because what does that mean? More accounts.
More accounts, and you know, you are standing in your way. And what's happening is, like you very beautifully mentioned, is that unconsciously you're sabotaging your own success.
Yeah.
So you have given us so much today, you know, really enjoyed the conversation. So can you share two tips that our listeners could take and implement in their lives straight away?
Two tips. I think the first tip would be, if you're in business, there's a lot you can do. And probably at least 80% of it is entirely redundant. Like if you stopped doing it tomorrow, it wouldn't make any difference. So focus on the activities that are most important for generating the revenue. And if you can't see that link, just stop them. Especially if you're right at the beginning of business, like just drop the stuff and just get insanely focused because that's where you'll get the traction. It's probably not going to be very much fun, but if your goal, I'm telling you it because I did it for a while, it's boring. I don't lie to people. I'll tell you up front. The reason most people aren't successful is because some of the stuff to really get you there is just really boring. But that short bit of time, the same way as, just dedicating to eating well, drinking water regularly, or just getting sleep will be transformational. It has a quantum leapy effect, make words up, right? So get insanely focused. Anytime you want to take anything in your business or anything in your life from one level to another, drop everything else and get insanely focused. Do that for a month or 2 months and you'll see so much more momentum than chipping away at doing a lot of different things. The second thing is focus on your strengths and as quickly as possible, let go of the stuff that isn't your strength. As quickly as possible. And it'll be, and the quicker you do it, the quicker you actually have a business. Because for as long as you're doing it all yourself, I'm self-employed, you know, you own a job, you're really good at it. Congratulations. and you're probably working more hours for less money than when you were in a job, right? So as soon as you start putting that stuff out, it has two effects. One, it frees your time. And secondly, it frees your energy. And when you're blocked, you can't let any more clients in. So you can't grow your business. So as soon as you give that stuff over to somebody else, they'll do it faster, they'll do it quicker. You'll have more headspace, you'll have more energy, and therefore you now have the space to actually serve more clients. Life's more fun too. Nobody likes doing the stuff they don't want to do.
You are absolutely right. And you know, it's lovely that what you mentioned is that play on your strengths and let the other people do what they're best at. So that said, I'm sure our listeners are going to have so many questions. How can they reach you and also share, you know, what programs you offer? So if they've connected with you, they can reach out and sign up. And I can definitely share with you, listeners, you know, Lavalda is phenomenal, as you've seen for yourself, and you'll not go wrong working with her.
So if you're after somebody really energetic for an event, right here, be be wrong of me not to put that plug in. I'm the same everywhere. This is just my personality. I don't change off stage, on stage. It's just who I am. If you're a budding entrepreneur, I work exclusively with women. I say that I do have one or two male clients, but predominantly with women. And I run a group called World Class Female Speakers. You can find it on Facebook. Just type in World Class Female Speakers, or it's facebook.com/groups, World Class Female Speakers. It's pretty easy to find. In there, I do Facebook Lives. I run training courses. I literally will share. I share lots of my journey in terms of what I'm doing to actually get speaking engagements. And, you know, depending on what the collective want, that sometimes forms what comes through next. So that's entirely free to join. So you can join there and pop in. If you've been listening and you're saying, right, thanks, Vada, all well and good for that free stuff, but I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious. You know, I am one of those people who is fed up of the free speaking gig. I've had a handful of paid ones. I'm really ready to step it up. I genuinely don't know how to find them. There's two ways of working with me. I do group programs in a mastermind setting. There's a couple of spaces still left in the current mastermind. Or I work with clients one-to-one. To find out more about any of that stuff, you can either join the group, World Class Female Speakers, or just drop me an email, lavelda@lavelda.com. Simplest way to get hold of me. Pop me an email, just say you were listening to me on the show, and I'll send you a link so you can book some time in. We can have a chat. I do like a good chin wag too.
Well, thank you so much, Lavelda, for sharing your contact information and being so free with sharing your knowledge and insight in your life. And, you know, there are so many different areas I'd love to explore, and most likely I'll probably bring you back.
I'd love that.
Yes, I'd love to have you again. So listeners, again, you know, thank you for listening to us. And as you always know, this show would not be possible without you. So thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence family. And Rebel, you are the best. So thank you again for helping us out here to make this show. And listeners, you can reach out to me at contact@divyaparekh.com. I'm here to serve and support you. Just let me know. How can I help you? What other stories and what other strategies I can bring to you that you would not be able to find anywhere else? And
thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.